What's up, aspiring and current houseplant parents? Welcome to the Indoor Jungle Podcast. I am Storm Shaw, here to bring you houseplant inspiration, tips on how to curate your indoor jungle on a budget, and other information about keeping those sweet green babies alive. What's up, plant mommies and daddies? Welcome to episode 3 of the Indoor Jungle. Today, we're going to talk about potting and repotting plants. We've already covered why one might be interested in starting a plant collection or plant family, however you decide to refer to it. We've also talked about a couple of plants that would be good for a beginner's collection. Now we need to talk about what kinds of pots or planters you might use to put those newfound plants into your home, as well as the actual process for putting the plants into the pot or planter and filling it with soil and getting them all set up nice and ready to go for a solid watering schedule so you can watch them grow. First up, we've got this episode's plant spotlight. And I'm really excited about this one because it actually has a pretty interesting history for a houseplant. It is the Chinese money plant, also known as the coin plant, the pancake plant, the UFO plant. It's got a lot of common names, but it is not to be confused with the Chinese money tree, which is a very different plant, and I'll talk about that at some point in the future. Its proper name is Pilea peperomioides, which just makes me think of Doodle Bob, Mihoi Minoi, shout out to Doodle Bob. But it's an Asiatic perennial herb, native to southern China, the Yunnan province, actually at the base of the Himalayas, below a certain elevation. And it's part of the stinging nettle family, which I just found interesting. The stinging nettle family, some variations of them have a lot of histamines that can cause allergies, and also some of that family are used in making herbal teas. But this plant, as recently as the 1970s, was sort of not well known. A sample was sent to a UK botanist and was identified as, quote, possibly Peperomia, which is a different plant family. And then in 1978, I'm going to butcher his name, but Wessel Marais, he was a botanist from the UK, found in the records when he was looking for information on this plant that a German botanist, Friedrich Diels, had labeled this plant or a similar plant as P. peperomioides, which is translates directly to peperomia-like. So basically there's a genus of plant called Peperomia, and peperomioides is saying it's like this other plant family. And it was actually officially named in 1912, after being found in 1910 by this German guy. And then it was promptly forgotten for about 30 years. I say forgotten, of course, to the locals in China, it never would have been forgotten. The thing grows basically like a weed around that province. It's just everywhere. But to the world at large and to houseplant connoisseurs, it was largely forgotten. And then in 1946, Agnar Espegren, a Norwegian missionary who had been in that area of China, was expelled by Chairman Mao around the time when foreigners and religious workers were being expelled from China, and he brought some with him. some of this Chinese money plant, coin plant, whatever, and gave it to some friends in Norway, and it sort of spread from there. That's sort of the epicenter of how this plant made it out of China and spreading is now spreading across the world. But what's interesting is that it wasn't even until 2010, so barely a decade ago, that it was first commercially grown. Up until 2010, it was only wildly grown, or you know, cuttings were shared. But it's now making its way into the houseplant popular culture because it is being commercially grown. And the thing grows like a weed, so it's no surprise that it spread pretty far and wide without needing to be commercially grown, because I've got one of these at home, and I just bought one little thing, and then I got a cutting from a houseplant swap in Kansas City, and I ended up planting those together, and they're putting up three or four babies out of the soil. I mean, the thing spreads quite naturally. So you can get a cutting of one of these from a friend, and it's going to multiply. So that's cool. What it kind of looks like is it's got this central spine that's sort of, as new leaves get put out, it develops almost like a bark-like texture. And going up that central spine, these long stems come out horizontally. And at the end of those long stems are these circular coin-like leaves that are just all solid green. And it just keeps putting out new leaves at the top of that stem. And those leaves come out kind of reddish and grow outward along a stem. And then you've got this sort of beautiful little shrub-like thing that dangles off coins. It's great. It's a fun plant to look at. As an added bonus, it's pet safe. So if you've got pesky cats, or in my case, a dog that likes to eat leaves, then it won't be toxic to them. And that's the plant spotlight. We will be right back. So you've picked some plants. Maybe you got some cuttings from some friends. Maybe you were feeling adventurous and you did a little prop lifting. But hopefully you've got something you feel confident in raising, like a snake plant variety or a pothos variety. Whatever the case is, you've got some plants. And if you went the safer route and went to some sort of plant store or a nursery, then likely your plants came in a nursery pot. So I want to talk a little bit about that first. What I notice a lot of new plant owners doing is buying plants from somewhere and then buying a pot or a planter that they think looks nice, and then just placing the plant right there in its nursery pot into the sort of actual planter as a cover almost. And there's several issues with that. One, often a plant in a nursery pot has probably already almost outgrown that space. And so you're not gonna see a lot of new growth because the root ball is gonna be tight and compacted. You're not gonna get a lot of oxygen or water to the roots in a nursery pot. And then on top of that, if you've put that down into a pot, especially a pot that doesn't have a drainage hole, then it can sit in water, and that's bad news for plants. So basically, you really need to repot, or, you know, for the first time, pot a plant when you buy it. I wouldn't leave it in the nursery pot too long. You'll get varying opinions on that, but again, depending on how overgrown it is in the nursery pot, it's just a recipe for stagnation or worse, a sick plant. So basically, that takes me to why we pot or repot plants in the first place. A houseplant, you know, can't be, it needs the right environment to grow effectively. And that means it can't be overgrown in its pot to the point where the root ball is sort of becoming a really tight tightly bound mass where it's grown in circles around the outside of the pot. You'll see this if you look it up. Often the roots have sort of spiraled around the outside of the pot, creating this tightly bound mass of roots that can cause various problems. Or it also doesn't like to be sort of a root ball drowning in too much soil. So I'm going to talk about the necessary size adjustments as you pot or repot plants when we get a little bit further into this. But yeah, other reasons to repot could be that there's a lack of nutrients in the soil that your plant has been in. Soil mixtures that you can get either pre-made or if you feel adventurous and you feel like mixing your own soil mixtures, they only have so much nutrients, right? They're not gaining more from the rain or other ways like that. And so once the plant sort of consumes all the nutrients or the nutrients get washed out, then that soil is no longer beneficial to your plant. And so every year or 2 years, a lot of plants need to be repotted. And so that doesn't always mean a new pot. It just means freeing up the roots, loosening the root ball, supplying them with the proper soil mixture that has proper nutrients, etc. So it really is about plant health and maintaining plant growth. Okay, so I've covered why repotting or potting up is necessary. Now I want to talk you a little bit through my process, what I actually do when I go about repotting a plant. So first of all, I usually wait till the springtime because the plants are usually dormant in the fall and winter a little bit, and so they're chilling and just trying to make it through. And so if you pot up or repot in the fall and winter, it can actually shock them much worse than normal. And that's no good. So be patient, wait till the spring so that you can basically put them in the right environment for their growth period for the spring and summer and set yourself up for an awesome growth period. So spring rolls around and I figure out which of my plants either need new soil or need more room. And basically then what I do is I take that plant and I'm going to carefully take it out of its planter and shake loose all of that soil as much as I can, get the soil off of the roots as I can and loosen up the roots because likely it's a little bit tight and compacted. So I'm going to kind of roll it between my hands gently, get it loose, loosen up the soil. If you want, you can carefully rinse the roots with some like lukewarm water and get as much of that old soil off as possible. I'm going to get rid of that soil altogether. Then what I'm going to do is rinse out the pot if I'm keeping it, or if I'm moving on to a new pot, then I just prepare that pot. I'm going to start with just replacing the soil. So if I'm keeping the pot, I rinse it out, get all the sediment out of it that I can. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a few rocks around the base of the pot. I just do like small, like half dollar size, like sort of flat-ish rocks around the base. And then I like to do a small layer of horticultural charcoal and then the soil. And I just put enough soil so that when I put the plant in it, the plant's going to sit on top of that, all those layers, and come right up to the top edge of the planter. And then I'm going to put soil on top of that and repack it and make sure the plant is steady and can stand up. And then I water it until it drains through the base, which is also, this is why I do it in the spring, because you need to rewater it. And if they're dormant, they're susceptible to root rot and things like that. But that's how I would go about repotting for soil needs. If I'm going to repot for the purposes of providing more room to the plant, it's going to vary by plant, actually, how much more room they're going to need. Like Sansevieria snake plant varieties, they actually prefer really tight potting situation, so I would only go up by like an inch, if at all. I was talking to someone at, I think, Family Tree Nursery, and he was telling me that there's an old adage that you shouldn't repot your snake plant until it breaks the pot that it's in. Obviously, that's a joke, but they like to be tight. Other plants, you're going to want to go up about 2 to 3 inches in diameter of pot, not much more than that. You don't want to give the plant too much room. Otherwise, that's more soil, which holds more moisture, which leads to root rot. So you just want to give it enough room to start putting out new roots and expanding and putting out new growth, but not so much that it's, you know, overwhelmed. And my system for repotting, or potting up actually in that case, is pretty much the same. I put down some rocks in the base, and I just like to do that because it provides a space for the water to go, to get it away from the roots, so that the roots aren't always sitting in water, and kind of allows the water to drain out the bottom easier, because I always have drainage holes in my pots. And then again, layer of horticultural charcoal, which you can find on Amazon pretty easily. And the horticultural charcoal basically does a couple things. It absorbs extra moisture, and then it's going to filter any of that water, so that any sort of minerals or anything that are in the water that could actually be harmful to some plants, like Dracaena varieties. Dracaena varieties sometimes actually prefer like distilled water, because tap water, some of the minerals and things in it can actually brown the leaf tips and things like that. So charcoal layers can help with that. It can filter out some of those things and keep your plant happy. And then again, soil, and you're going to need the right soil mixture. So if it's a succulent, you're going to want fast draining, well draining soil. You can usually find a cactus or succulent mixture wherever you're buying your soil from. If it's a tropical, you're going to want, basically, you can find indoor plant soil mixtures that are still fast draining, but don't have as much perlite or various other things that make the soil a little bit drier or sandier or things like that, because tropicals like a little bit more moisture than succulents and cacti. And you're just going to fill up that new planter to a point where when you set the plant back in with a loosened root ball, it is sitting, you know, just below the lip of the pot, and then fill it in with that new soil as well on top, pack it down, give it a nice watering, let it completely drain out, and you're good to go for another year or so. So that's kind of my repotting or potting up practice, and it's served me well. I continue to get new growth on my plants. They seem happy, and I'm going to probably stick to it. However, I'm also interested lately in these, I might try it this spring, LECA balls, which are, it's an acronym for, oh, it's going to escape me. I'll look it up real quick. We'll cheat here. It is, they're these clay balls, often used for orchids, but you can actually use them for a lot of different plants, and it's sort of a hydroponic growing technique. But it stands for lightweight expanded clay aggregate, which is a whole thing, phrase there, right? But it basically just means they're clay balls that have been baked that can soak up water and expand. And so you actually don't use soil at all. You basically put those LECA clay balls down into what I've seen is like actual glass containers that maybe you could find at like Hobby Lobby or something, right? And no soil, just the LECA balls. And you position your plant down in there with the roots in between the LECA balls, and you water it. And basically what happens is the water soaks into the clay balls, and they expand a little bit, and then it allows your plant to choose when to drink because it's not actually submerged in any water like can happen in soil. And so the roots will then extract water from the clay balls as they kind of desire. But what you have to do with this method is you have to actually add minerals to the soil, to the water, because the LECA is literally just clay balls. There's no nutrients in it whatsoever. So you have to get a little bit fancy with it, and you've got to, when you water it, you have to add liquid nutrients to the water and even pH balance the water, because houseplants like to be at a 5.5 to 6.5 pH. So it's a method I'm not super familiar with, but I kind of want to try it because you've got a lot more control over essentially how much nutrients and water is going into your plant. But also, if you do it in a see-through glass container, you can actually see all of your roots kind of growing, and you can monitor the root health, whereas in like a terracotta or, you know, fancy or cool-looking pot, you can't. So it's something I am going to look into. I might even do a future episode all on LECA once I've done a little bit of research into it and maybe tried it myself. But yeah. So those are kind of some of the different potting, repotting, potting up options and strategies that I approach. And I would love to hear if you, you know, listen to this and you do something different that's effective for you. Please share it on the Instagram at plantdaddykc. I want to hear, because it's all about why I love working with houseplants is because different strategies or different techniques or methods work for people, depending, you know, because each environment is different and the lighting and the humidity, et cetera, is all different. And so a lot of people figure out what works for their environment. So I'd love to hear from you if you hear this and want to shoot me a DM or a comment on a picture. I'll put up a post about this episode and you can comment on that post. But yeah. All right, and the last little thing I wanted to talk about just kind of briefly here is soil mixtures. So I tend to use pre-made soil mixtures, and they work pretty well. But the problem with soil mixtures is that you're going to get gnats. Most likely you're going to get those little fruit flies. It's just there's the ingredients that are used in most pre-made soils have those gnat larvae or eggs or whatever in there. It's hard to avoid. And so, yeah, just prepare yourself for that if you're going to start bringing in houses and you're making that indoor jungle, you're going to have gnats. Just consider it part of the ambiance. But if you want to, you know, get rid of those, there's all kinds of sticky traps. That's what's worked best for me, that you can kind of stick in your plant, and as the gnats come up out of the soil, they'll kind of buzz around and stick to that, and you throw it away once it's kind of covered. It's kind of gross, but it works. But in terms of other soil mixtures, there are certain mixtures that will tell you, you know, like free of, there's a ingredient specifically, I can find it real quick. Let's see here. It is, so they're fungus gnats, which is yum. And let's see. So they're attracted to the moisture in the potting soil, and typically when you buy the soil, there's already, you know, eggs in it. and I forget, there's a certain ingredient that some houseplant soils will, you know, say that they left out that ingredient. I can't remember right this second. Doesn't matter, but they can be annoying and they're kind of gross. So basically try not to keep your soil too moist or it'll increase it. The ones you already have naturally will lay more eggs and then you'll have more and it's a whole gross thing. So I give up. I can't find it, but what you can do and that I've done is for I've really only done this for one of my I have a hedge cactus. There's a lot of different names for it, but I made my own soil mixture for that largely to meet the cactus needs since I'm in Kansas, which cacti don't grow in Kansas naturally, so I wanted to try to mimic its more natural environment with the soil, but I also wanted to avoid gnats in that one. So I did a portion of a cactus mix that was already made from a local soil place off Troost, if you're from Kansas City. I forget what it's called. There's soil in the name, though. And it specifically mentioned no fungus gnats on it. I mixed that with some a little bit of sand and then some lava rock. So it's a really dry, sort of craggy soil. And it's been great. I mean, the cactus was probably 15 inches when I bought it. And it's, which was probably beginning of the summer, 2020. And now it's like over 2 feet. I mean, it's shot up. And I just had it outside in full sun, watered it, you know, once a week at most, usually every other week. And now it's down to like, I think I'm going to water it once a month, maybe through the winter, if that. But yeah, soil mixtures can be really fun if you kind of dive into the specific plant need. So if you look up, you know, what kind of soil the plant naturally occurs in, and then buy a couple different ingredients, make your own soil mixture, you can have a lot of success that way. So look into that. I may have a future episode all about, you know, tropical plants like this kind of soil mixture. Here's a few brands that you could mix together, etc., and put together like a, I don't know, we'll call it a soil lab or something like that. But yeah, so anyway, this has been my take on potting, repotting, potting up. Like I said, I'm going to look into those LECA techniques and my take on soil mixtures and the problems that come with pre-made soil mixtures and the fun you can have with making your own. So thank you for listening, and I look forward to hearing from you guys again. Hit me up at PlantDaddyKC on Instagram. And I started putting out feelers for people. I want to do interviews on this podcast, and so I don't need anyone, you know, famous or anything. I want to talk to other people who are into houseplants. So I've started kind of messaging some people on my Instagram who are from Kansas City. I would like to start that way. So if you're from Kansas City, you're into houseplants, and you want to show up on the podcast and talk about some aspect of it that's important to you, I would love to hear from you. So shoot me a message, and I'll get back with you. Awesome. Thanks for listening, guys. See you next week.